We'll be talking to Bill Lee in
when
a little
Bill
while.
Lee pitched for the Montreal Expos, they asked him about drug use. And he said, heck yeah. And he said that he uses marijuana. And then someone asked him, oh my God, you use marijuana? The commissioner's office wants to know what you do with the marijuana.
And he said he puts it on his pancakes. He eats it for breakfast.
He said he puts it on his pancakes.
Nowadays, I think he puts it on his cabbage.
He got suspended for that.
Back in old days, back in the heady days of Major League Baseball in the 70s, drugs were cool. Doc Ellis was pitching no-hitters on acid, and they were all smoking dope. But nowadays, with people like Dwight Gooden, Steve Howe, and Daryl Strawberry,
they all go to coke.
These guys have all put a bad name on drug use in Major League Baseball.
You know, because they used to just drink a lot. I mean, you know,
whatever happened to the good old days of womanizing, gambling, and smoking a little bit of that wacky tobacco?
There is a player, I can't remember his name, and they would always say he's afraid to slide into second base because he'll break his hip flask. So he would never slide.
Who was that?
I can't remember who it was. And there was a player in the 80s, I can't remember his name, and one time he stole second base and he didn't slide, and the reason was he had a vial of coke in his back pocket.
Tom Browning anyway?
Tom Browning pitched batting practice for the Reds the other day. He had marijuana in his Jeep. Nobody cared. Nobody, you know.
And he was down in Kentucky when he got busted anyway, so that's like a normal everyday thing there, isn't it?
You know, everybody just needs to relax, enjoy the game. We got a bunch of steroid-fed maniacs out there playing baseball. Just kind of taking some of the fun out of it.
Good evening, Cincinnati. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together we are the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. On the phone from a big mountain in Vermont, where I believe he moved to shoot himself, we have Bill Lee, the former spaceman of Major League Baseball.
Bill, welcome to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Well, thank you.
So what are you doing up in Vermont?
Cleaning my weapons.
Cleaning your weapons?
Yeah, I live up here on the hill, and, you know, I got moose in the backyard, and wild blueberries, wild raspberries.
Now, in your autobiography, you said that when you retired, you were going to go up on a mountain and shoot yourself, and you've been retired since when, Rob?
When was it, 81?
82, sometime in May, I got released by the Expos, and not one club in America wanted me, so...
So how come you haven't shot yourself yet?
Well, I know how to clean a rifle very well, and let's see, I was a Spec 4 in the Army, and I'm... You know, all I know where the business end of a weapon is, and I can shoot and survive, and I never really wanted to shoot myself, I don't think. I said I would retire at the end of a mountain, and I said that I'd eventually be run out of baseball with 17 knife wounds in my back, and the cause of death would be called self-inflicted.
That's sort of what happened. You were the best left-handed reliever on the Expos and one of the best hitting pitchers in the game at the time. You got released by the Expos, and you didn't get a nibble from anybody else. Is that correct?
That's exactly what happened, and it was 81 after the strike year. I was a big labor relations guy.
Now, how'd you feel about that baseball strike?
Well, the owners pushed, I'll tell you originally, if they had given us more meal money and given us probably a $500 raise, Marvin Miller never would have gotten his foot in the door as being the representative. So basically they wanted to bust us from the beginning, and because we were a collective bargaining agency and we filed the right way and did everything right, that's why we've never lost in court and why the owners have always shot themselves in the foot.
What was the difference between that strike back then and the one we had a year back that canceled our World Series for everybody?
Not much. Very, very similar.
Pretty much all the same issues, huh?
Oh, pretty much the same.
Well, then how come we can't figure out all the problems here in 20 years?
Well, you can't. The system doesn't work because as long as there's laws on the book to protect collective bargaining, and if the owners don't want to collective bargain, they want to implement their own scheme without going through collective bargaining, they're always going to be wrong and always going to be slapped on the hand. So basically the owners have always felt that everything was wrong. They could eventually break it. They could eventually break the union. They could eventually break the will of the players, and it never has happened. And we've been solidified and marched on. And basically salaries have gotten too high because of the reluctance of the owners to capitulate early in the agreement. If they had been a little softer, we probably would have revenue sharing, we would have less free agency. We would have probably had exactly what utopia would be for both parties. But the owners didn't want it that way. They wanted to break us early. And they've lost consistently. And they put the players in a very bad light the last time. And the fans didn't. You know, it's like you cannot go out and say, you know, our product is lousy, our players suck, everything else. Please come to our ballpark and watch it. You know, it's a juxtaposition of terms, and basketball has promoted their product. Football has promoted their product. They pay the big bucks to the big guys, and basically we're going to have a two-tier system, and then Chris Sabol will be out there peddling Super Bowls.
I wanted to ask you about that. So I was there at Riverfront Stadium yesterday, and Chris Sabo's bat.
You were in the green seats,
I was in the green seats. Chris Sabo's bat splits open, and there are little rubber balls all over the infield.
You might remember where the green seats are, Bill Leafs.
I know.
You were here in 75, weren't you, brother?
I gave up a few home runs up in the upper echelons of that ballpark.
Now, there's only one that really comes to my mind real quick.
Oh, I gave up one in an old-timers game to Cesar Cedeno.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something, though. I always say that Chris Sabo, that's fine. He's working hard. He's trying to make it back. And if it makes him feel better that he thinks his bat's loaded, more power to him. It's not the arrow that kills you. It's the Indian, you know. And
he's batting 206 or 213 or something like that anyway.
Yeah.
If he's batting with a loaded bat and that's the best he can do,
He's just trying to get a lighter bat. He's trying to get a ball that he could, like he used to be able to hit out. And basically when a guy gets hurt or a little sore, he's got to go down in ounces. And when he goes down in ounces, he's going to lose that power that he had. He's going to be maybe a line drive, warning track power type of guy. And that's what he's become. So he used to hit a lot of fly balls, and a lot of them fly balls used to make it out. Now his fly balls, because he's a little hurt, a little sore and stuff, they're just kind of, you know, half warning track shots.
We're talking to Bill Lee on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Now, when Chris Sabo's bat exploded and little rubber balls went all over the place, of course everybody acted shocked, surprised. They couldn't believe that Major League Baseball players cheat.
I heard the ump was splitting a gut over that one.
No, they were
Sabo. Sabo was laughing.
Sabo was laughing. Everybody on the Reds bench was laughing. They all knew. So how common is this sort of thing in the Major League game? Maybe you don't know today, but when you played, how common was that sort of thing?
Oh, hell, Carbo loaded his bats. A lot of guys loaded their bats.
And, did Carlton Fisk load his bat in Game 6?
No, that was a Pat Darcy hanging sinker about shoe-top high.
But Carbo's bat was loaded in Game 6.
Probably. The ball that he hit out of dead center field was probably a loaded bat. But let's put it this way. It would have gone out anyway, you know, and it's my theory in it that if, you know, Albert Bell and stuff, he doesn't need to load his bats, you know, to hit the ball out. And but if you can, you know, softball goes to titanium, which is outlawed, double-walled bats. Everybody's trying to hit the ball further and further. Guys are trying to jump higher and higher. People are trying to run faster and faster. It's common nature. It's the inevitability of technology to be implemented. You know, the only thing that's bad about it, that some of those things are unsafe, and you'll get a bat that, like, stuck Jaeger in the neck. You know, if that had been a doctored bat that broke and stuff and caused a guy to die at home plate, then you're looking at it. But if the technology is right there, I don't see why not, as long as it's a wood natural product and stuff. I can't see him going to metal bat, so.
No. Another guy that's kind of famous around Cincinnati, because he's from Cincinnati, is Don Zimmer. Mm. And you had a special nickname for him.
Oh, he's my buddy.
Oh, yeah. So just speak a little bit about Don Zimmer. What was that nickname you had for him?
Well, I call him the gerbil, but some kid told me and said that, no, he's those ones that are fat, puffy and got big cheeks are hamsters. Gerbils got little skinny legs and hide in the desert, come out at night and play go to dog tracks.
Now, a lot of the younger listeners in our audience, and God knows our audience is full of those younger kind of listeners, and the kind that will be around in 20, 30, 40 years to carry on the inspiration of the game. They're not going to know who Don Zimmer is.
He's still coaching today. I think he's with the Rockies.
He definitely.
But he's just a coach
now. He will
now.
Be coaching. He's like Mao Zedong. They'll have him stuffed on the bench somewhere. And people will come by and rub his cheeks and his hat, you know, and go up to the plate. And until he starts smelling, that's the only time they're going to take him off the bench.
Speaking of being loaded and being stuffed, you know, the Reds got Kevin Mitchell back today. I don't know if that's good news or bad news, but he's already on the disabled list, I hear.
They got him from the Red Sox?
Yes, they did.
Just signed him this afternoon.
Sucker's born every minute. P.T. Barnum. I'll tell you, the guy weighs 400 pounds.
In Cincinnati, we call P.T. Barnum Jim Bowden.
I'm telling you. Well, hey, look at the Red Sox went and got him. They had Mo Vaughn, they had Canseco, and they had him on the, and if they were on one side of the diamond, it would have tipped into the ocean. I'm telling you, there was some beef out there. And look at Canseco's on the DL. He's had a bad hamstring all year. He really hurt it badly early in the season, and basically he got in shape. He can hit. He hit well, and as soon as he started hitting well, the Red Sox unloaded him. And that's what a good GM does. When you got a guy that's going to break down, as soon as he's going good. Yeah, hi, Jan.
Who's that?
My 2-year-old.
What's
up
her name?
On the hill. That's what I do. I just make babies up here.
And you eat cabbage too, right?
I eat a lot of cabbage. Germans eat a lot of cabbage.
How do you prepare that cabbage? Like you make sauerkraut out of it or what?
I eat coleslaw every day, and cabbage is sour for the stomach, sweet for the soul, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So don't eat sweets and eat a lot of cabbage. Yes, honey, I'll pick you up here.
Well, okay. Does she want to talk to us? What's her name?
Anna. Oh, she'll talk. She talk baseball. She knows Don Zimmer personally.
Does she?
Yeah, she's a ball player. She picks her butt, too.
Really? Is she a big fan of the major leagues?
Yeah, she likes the major league.
What's her favorite team?
Her favorite team is the New England Gray Sox. Jim, her daddy, starting hit fourth, her daddy, and pitches every other day, her daddy.
So you still play a lot, don't you?
Oh, I play. I'm playing 40 games in 46 days in Canada. Play a lot of hardball, and I play as much as I can.
Now the Gray Sox, is that some sort of old-timers league?
Yeah, Buckner played for us. Yeah, I'll play with you, honey. Who else plays on that team? Rick Miller plays center field. The Stenhouse brothers from Rhode Island. Billy Allman, the shortstop. Myself, Bob Stanley. Well, I got to talk on the phone, honey, but I'll get back to you. What do you want to do? Ready or not? Oh, she's hiding. Oh, yeah. I'll play hide and seek. Go hide. I'll find you. A couple of weeks.
We're talking to Bill Lee on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WAIF. Bill, you obviously love the game. You're still playing in that semi-professional league, I guess you'd call it.
Oh, we beat up on kids.
Do you think the players today, do you see a lot of them having that deep, passionate love for the game like you do? Do you think some of these guys will still be playing when they're in their 40s and 50s just because they love the game?
No, they will have enough money in their estates and everything else, and their lawyers, they'll be doing other things. They'll be selling stuff. And I just enjoy playing. I enjoy pitching. I enjoy going out. It keeps you cardiovascularly sound. You know, I enjoy hitting. And the game is just a great game to play, especially when you know how to play it well and you can beat up on college kids. And I can go out to Lima, Ohio and Fort Wayne, Indiana and play against A-ball players and beat them. You know, at 49, and it's a feather in my cap that I can still do it, and it's always put up or shut up time, and it makes you, it's like Lasorda said, as bad as I hated Lasorda and everything else, there's nothing better than walking down the street after you've had a good ball game. And that's the best statement he said. As far as him running out and stuff, you know, if I die with a heart attack on the mound, so be it, you know. I'm not going to say I'm going to leave because I'm afraid of this and afraid of that, or afraid of this hitter or afraid of that hitter, you know. All of them Dodgers are pains in the asses. You know,
the Dodgers and the Yankees just have a holier-than-thou, we're better-than-that, the rest of the whole world attitude.
That's right. I've always hated them like that. And I've always liked Cincinnati until they got that anal retentive, you know, can't have facial hair, can't have this, can't have that.
Well, it's always been like that in Cincinnati just
about.
No,
it's not.
Yeah, it went through periods where it wasn't like that, you know, and I'll tell you, they had great ball players, great organization, you know, Veda Pinson, and you think about all the great guys that have come through there and played the game, and Nuxall, and who's the whip, Yul Blackwell.
Well, if the baseball players can't have facial hair, do you think the owners should? Because Marge Schott sometimes is sporting a little bit of a beard there.
Yeah, well, it's, you know... If she just had had a good wedding night, I think everything would have been a lot better.
You know, I know you live up on a mountain there, but you still probably cannot miss the media furor over old Marge. In Cincinnati, she has a lot of fans. What do you think, old Marge?
Like I said, if she had had a good wedding night, things would have been a lot different, you know. The guy went out, left her, went out and played poker with the guys, and the rest is history. And
sounds like you read Sports Illustrated, too.
Yeah, but that's what I read, and that if that's the truth and that's what happened, then I can see that she's got a little animosity, and she's going to be better than the boy. She's going to be better than those guys. She's going to, you know, there's nothing wrong with having that tenacity and stuff, but don't think you know everything, and don't be chain-smoking, and don't be doing this and that. And there's a lot of things that are wrong. I mean, I think she would like me. I would tell it like it is, and I'd go toe to toe with her.
Have you ever met the lady?
No, I could back it up. I've gone toe to toe with some of the giants in the game, you know,
Bud Selig?
Run out too, but I've been run out by Haywood Sullivan. I've only got two people that really didn't like me, and that's John McHale and Haywood Sullivan. And I think John McHale would have kept me, except that the powers that be and everything else. They were making a big change and a big statement about radicalism back in the late 80s, and I was the forefront. You know, I was the laissez-faire darling of Mao Zedong. You know, and they were going to run me out, even though I loved the game and still could play.
We're talking to Bill Lee on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WIIF. Well, you know, baseball is looking for a commissioner. Bud Selig can't do it forever. He's not doing a very good job.
They haven't had a commissioner in years.
If you became commissioner tomorrow, Mr. Lee, what would you do?
No AstroTurf, no designated hitter.
Yeah.
Go back. Let's play the ball game the way it's supposed to be played. If you're going to have interleague play, it's in spring training and a little barnstorming before the season, but then no interleague play. You play your games. You play within your division quite a bit. You build up a lot of rivalry. You play really good ball. I don't mind the playoff system that much. It allows a lot of people a little extra shot, you know, and keep it that way. And, basically get the pitchers to throw strikes, get the ball over, and if they can't, then they got to walk the Appalachian Trail for the whole summer.
What about Pete Rose? We all think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. I have not met one outspoken baseball personality that thinks that he should be banned. What do you think, Mr. Bill Lee?
I don't think he ever bet against his ball club. I know he's a bettor, he's a compulsive bettor, and he's a cheap shot artist. He hit a lot of people. He hit me in a volleyball game on the island of Hawaii in the Superstars competition.
Well, he's a carnivore, you know, and you got to expect that sort of thing from a meat eater.
I agree 100%. And he's the kind of guy, if you're going to go to battle, you want him to be running point for you. You know, he's big, he's strong, he's tough, he's mean, he'll do the hitting. He'll do everything he can for you to win, and I respect that, and he should be in the Hall of Fame. There's a lot of other crooks that are a lot worse than him that are in the Hall of Fame.
Do you think we should build his own separate wing and give him his own wing in Cooperstown?
Oh, he could be in there with Shoeless Joe Jackson, him, and all the other greats, you know. And they're mean, you know. I mean, Comiskey was worse than him. Cap Anson was worse than him.
Cap Anson kept out black players almost single-handedly for decades.
Exactly. You got Cap Anson. You got this guy. You got, Ty Cobb. You know, he was a pain in the ass. You know, and Babe Ruth, the greatest ball player of all time, he picked up a girl and left his car running in the middle of the street down there in spring training. You know, that's the kind of stuff that would have made the tabloids. He'd been run out of town. So, you know, it's just got boys will be boys, and there's a lot of testosterone going around in baseball, and it's tight pants that keep people coming out there playing. Half the genders out there, I'll tell you, there's a guys in uniform, and that was us playing hard and going into town and pillaging and trying to beat the other team for 4 days and raising hell, and it was it's Americana in a way.
In 1975, when you were playing for the Boston Red Sox, before you knew that you guys were going to be the big team in the American League, did you know what was happening as the season was coming along? Did you know that you guys were destined to go on into the greatest World Series of all time?
No, we never anticipated that.
Was the whole year just a fog to you?
Huh?
Was the whole year just a big blurry fog as far as you're concerned?
Oh, hell no. The whole year was... it was exactly like the year before. We should have won it in 74. We should have won it in 73. We lost by a half a game in 72 to the Detroit Tigers. In 75, we had a four-man rotation, and most of the guys wanted a four-man rotation, and I said, no, we should go to a five-man rotation. And we stayed in a four-man rotation. We were playing 500 ball, and I was winning. I was the only guy able to handle a four-man rotation, and finally they added Roger Moret. He went 11-1, and we blew away the rest of the competition, and we went wire to wire after that.
You were 17-9 in 1975.
Yeah, and I had 17 wins before August.
And you then kind of blew.
I didn't win a game. I hurt my elbow swinging the bat in batting practice, and I didn't win a game. I didn't even pitch a game in September.
You guys didn't bat in the American
League.
No, see,
that was a bad. He knew that he was going to the World Series.
That's exactly
so
right.
So you had to get in shape hitting.
That's exactly
and
right.
And you hadn't hit for a couple
That's
years.
That's exactly right. And I hadn't hit in 3 years, and because of the DH, my elbow had shrunk up. It had gotten. See, when you swing the bat, you hyperextend your elbow a little bit. And it stretches your arm out. Now, if you pitch all every day and don't swing the bat, your elbow is going to shorten. And then when you do swing the bat, then you're going to strain your medial epicondyle and your flexor muscles.
Whoa.
And that's exactly what I did. And I was on the shelf for over 40 days.
Well, in 1975, the Red Sox and the Reds were pretty evenly matched. Just the breaks went the Reds' way. But there's a new book out called When the Boys Came Back about baseball in 1946. And we talked to the author, Frederick Turner, a couple weeks ago. And he had this to say about the Red Sox and why they haven't won a World Series in 80 or 90 years, whatever it's been. He wrote that it is something very tangible. That damned ballpark inevitably warps all Red Sox teams into power-oriented outfits that play for big innings and emphasize slugging at the expense of better all-around play and consistency of execution. Do you buy Mr. Frederick Turner's thesis about why the Red Sox haven't won a World Series in 80 years?
100%. I've said the same thing all along. If you win early in the year, you'll win late in the year. And what they do is they don't hit when the wind blows in. They don't hit when the wind changes in the fall. And but we were an exception in 75. We played well early. We played well late. And, you know, we were bangers too. But we were fundamentally sound, strength up the middle. And that was one of the few Yawkey teams that was built around defense, or just happened to have defense. When you had Lynn in center, Fisk behind the plate, Burleson and Doyle at second, and they were pretty good. But inevitably, we lost to the Cincinnati Reds because we didn't turn a play in the seventh game, and it was because Doyle was out of position and threw the ball away. And that was when the next hitter up was Perez, hit the two-run homer off me.
So how does Doyle get along with you guys at team reunions?
Well, he blames it on Yastrzemski stretching too soon. I blame it on Zimmer moving Doyle out of double play position because of Bench had tried to hit me the other way, so they moved Doyle away from second.
Is Denny Doyle? He's the second baseman, shortstop.
He was the second baseman.
Denny Doyle's a second baseman.
Burleson was the shortstop.
Rick Burleson.
And people, see, they remember the 75 World Series, and they remember Perez hitting the home run off me, and they say, oh, and then we lost. People don't remember that we had one out, Bench at the plate, a 2-1 count on Bench, and he hits a perfect two-hopper to short, and Burleson had to wait for Doyle to get to second base to give him the ball. And that's when Rose was bearing down on him, and Doyle leaped in the air, made the throw, and the ball went over Yastrzemski's head into the dugout.
Right. Johnny Bench had a terrible World Series.
That would have been the third out of the inning. Now, all of a sudden, I start the seven with Perez leading off with a 3-0 lead. Gotta like that.
Now, I don't know if you guys on the old Red Sox have planned or participated in any reunions, but some of the big shots with the Reds have been trying to put the old 75 and 76 team back together for a night just to hang out at the old ball yard. But they're encountering problems that
they
mostly
can
revolve around people wanting money and schedules.
No.
You can't get there. And also because baseball won't let Pete in the door.
Well, Pete can't get in the door. Morgan's working with ESPN. You got benches on his own. You got everybody going one way or the other. Guys coaching here, guys coaching there. It's very difficult to get people together during the season. You could do it better in the off season and honor them, you know, if you guys make the playoffs and go to the World Series, you know, then you could probably get everybody. But you got to get a commissioner that's going to, you know, let's let bygones be bygones.
Right.
You know, and let's start fresh. Let's get a commissioner that's good for the fans, You know, the fans are the people that have to speak, not the ball players, not the owners. And the commissioner has to represent the fans.
Do you think the fans are making enough noise?
Not at all.
No.
They've got to make, the only way they make noise is economically when they boycotted and strike. But they've got to organize. They've got to petition the government. They've got to pass legislation in the United States to allow the commissioner to be elected by the fans. And if the fans and control the commissioner's office, then you're going to have an agreement between the owners and the players, and you're going to have harmony, and you're going to have, you know, but then the fans will probably take too much power, and they'll start trying to dictate interleague play and everything else, and, you know, they'll screw the pooch, and we'll be down the chute again.
Well, we're talking to Bill Lee on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, and Bill, you're pretty outspoken now, but you were outspoken in your playing days, like when they asked you how you use marijuana, and you said you put it on your pancakes, and that got you in hot water. Why do most players nowadays, and even back in the old days, seem to just be wishy-washy and mealy-mouthed? Is it because they're an athlete and they're just so dedicated to the pursuit of their craft that they don't have time to form other parts of their personality? Or are like the big money agents and the managers and the owners try to keep the players from, you know, spouting off like that?
And do you still put drugs on your cabbage?
Well, two out of the three. You know, the first thing you said was right. They don't develop on a certain level, and there is a gag order, and their agents tell them not to say certain things because it'll hurt them, and they kind of take the party line, and they're dumb as a post, you know. That's basically it, and they've never really developed. And if you don't develop on an emotional, a physical and a intellectual level, then you're ceased to cease to expand and reach that fourth level, or as George Ivanovich Gurdjieff said, to reach that seventh level of enlightenment. Need enlightenment and be a Zen Buddhist and a Dalai Lama and all that type of thing. But there's not too many ball players that are going to be talking to the Dalai Lama.
Right, you're one of the few baseball autobiographies that I've read that's mentioned Buckminster Fuller in it.
Well, Buckminster Fuller is probably one of the great thinkers of our century, and it's basically his mathematics and his thought process and his disproving the Malthusian theory that there is enough to go around, and that basically it's completely eliminates the trickle-down theory and the fact that you've got to provide charities and things for the have-nots, because there is enough to go around and everybody should be sharing, because this orb that we live on is a replicating, self-perpetuating, you know, it's Nikola Tesla. Developed this theory on static electricity that we could be powered for just on the rotation of the Earth, we can be powered for eternity. And with superconductivity and the fact that we've got trains that'll go 400 miles an hour now, you know, we're on the brink of self-sufficiency, and we don't have to rely on nuclear energy, or we don't have to rely on our fossil fuels, which Buckminster Fuller was so adamant about. And yeah, I was a devotee of him, and I was, I was a philosopher, and I come from a family of philosophers. My great-grandfather was, you know, head of philosophy at the University of Southern California and dean of graduate school. So, you know, it's in my genes, and, you know, the apples don't fall too far from the tree.
It's Bill Lee on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. And Bill, before the Game 7 of the 75 World Series that you pitched against Don Gullett, Sparky Anderson, who was the Reds manager at the time, said, "I don't know about that fella for the Red Sox, but sometime after this game, my boy's going to the Hall of Fame."
That's right.
And then you said, "I don't care where Gullett's going, because after this game, I'm going to the Elliott Lounge."
That's right.
You know, the Elliott Lounge closed earlier this year.
No, it's closing this November.
Oh, it's closing this November.
Yes, it's closing during the World Series, and I will be there for the last pint that goes out of that place.
You're drinking the last draft, eh?
I'm drinking the last draft.
Do you think Doc Ellis really pitched a no-hitter on acid?
No, Doc Ellis...
He's just making that up, huh?
Doc Ellis wouldn't know acid if it fell out of a battery cable.
What about you? Have you ever pitched a major league game on acid?
No. You can't get out of bed on acid. You wouldn't be able to... You would be so slow and stuff. There's a story of the guy that was driving across Golden Gate Bridge in his Volkswagen bus, and the highway patrolman pulls him over at the end and says, "You know how fast you were going across the bridge?" He says, "No, sir." He says, "You were doing 4 miles an hour." You know, it's there's a lot of, you know, it's...
Well, why would Doc Ellis make up something like that then?
Oh, he always made things up. If you've ever read Doc Ellis in the Kingdom, in the Country of Baseball by Donald Hall, the poet from New Hampshire, it basically tells about him. He was a mean little guy with a big stick, and he used to steal milk money from all the kids. He's always been a bully and a pain in the ass, and, you know, he's basically continued to do it by his you know, if he was a what do you call those, a prairie sage hen, he would be the biggest one in the whole herd. You know, he would have all the women stalking after him because he could puff his chest up bigger than the rest of us. You know, but there's not a lot of substance there.
Well, what do you think about the fanatical war on drugs in this country?
I think it's they're barking up the wrong tree, because the problem is drugs are a symptom of a problem of an economic structure within the world that forces the smaller countries and the places like the Kashmir and the triangle out there and to produce a lot of heroin and poppy crops and everything else. And everything else. If these countries were self-sufficient, had an economic structure to produce other goods and stuff, I think that we would see less and less, and you would find a better society and stuff. And I think it's, you know, everybody says it's the supply side dictates it and stuff, and that's why the demand is there. But it's been around for eternity and stuff. And I've always thought drugs weren't the problem; they were a symptom of a bigger problem. And that's the economic distribution in the planet Earth.
Well, is there anything wrong with just recreational drug use? You've dabbled, I know.
Oh, yeah, but the key is that that can't be your forefront. Your concern has got to be nice to people, nice to the planet Earth, not violate any of the physical laws of nature, gravity, or anything else, and basically be a productive human being and... do the right thing, and if it becomes a problem, if you're over-imbibed on wine, cigarettes, or if you're a chain smoker, then the police have got to come out and pull you off the street and throw you in boot camp. And if I'm elected president, that's what's going to happen. It's just there's not going to be a lot of overindulgence.
You seem pretty down-to-earth to me, Mr. Lee. How did you get the name Spaceman?
Well, slow press day. It's kind of like when Bob Newhart did that cartoon, and he talked about the time they sunk all those Japanese freighters and stuff, and the trouble it was in 1955. He was a U-boat commander, and it's just he said it was we got a little too much press. You know, it was a slow press day, and actually I did it. I pitched a great game on a day that we landed on the moon the second time, and my roommate or my Actually, my cellmate, the guy in the locker next to me in the clubhouse, couldn't get out for a date with his girl. And I was talking about the space program, and he couldn't even get to his locker because I'd thrown, I think, a two-hitter through 8 2/3 of relief pitching for Louis Tiant. Got three hits myself, drove in the winning run. And so everybody in Baltimore and Washington, D.C. were around my locker, and he couldn't get out. And he called me the spaceman, and some writer who just, you know, wanted to one-up someone else kind of used it, and it kind of stuck. But it really had nothing to do with being flighty or off the wall or anything else. It just was, and I like it now because I don't want to be from this planet the way things are going. I want to be a visitor.
Well, we sure thank you for visiting the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Well, I appreciate it. You guys are great, and, you know, I've always had a, you know, a fond part for Cincinnati. I love their restaurants. You know, I like the Blind Lemon up on the top of the hill, and every time I'm back there, I'm up on the top.
All right.
Now, you do a radio show nowadays, don't you?
I have my own show in Montreal.
Well, can me and Rob be guests on your show sometime?
Yeah, it's only 15 minutes. It's you got to send a fax in if you want to. It's called Answers from Space. If you want to know an answer to a question, you send it in to Montreal, CIQC Radio, and I'll answer it.
What's the fax number?
Good question. I got the phone number. It's 514-747-OJ-Simpson, 57 Chevy.
All right, we're sending you some dumb questions real soon.
Okie doke.
All right, thanks, Bill Lee.
Bye-bye.
Former Boston Red Sox and Montreal Expo, Bill Lee on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.